Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 701 of Longbox Heroes, the Lamborghini of comic book podcasts. Joe and Todd here. Todd, hello, how are you?
I'm doing great. Only 299 more episodes till I retire.
Oh, that gives me, let me do my gazintas here.
3 years, maybe.
That gives me like 3.5 years, something like that.
Right. It's almost like we have enough previews for that.
I have enough previews to do Patreon shows up until then, right?
Yeah, and then contract renegotiations.
So. Oh, boy.
I want three donuts there.
Well, I heard he won't answer me directly, but I hear a lot of that Hayabusa money has been freed up.
Oh, cap space. Soon to be named network cap space.
Yes.
I wear a big cap, so.
Oh, goodness. But I was, you know, every time that we reach like a big milestone number like this.
Eight.
I always think about like, nah, maybe we should just like not number it anymore. Just like the latest episode or whatever it is.
Just date it.
And just date it. Because it is dated anyway. It's dated and episode numbered anyway. But I like having that big number, you know?
I honestly think when we get to 1,000, as they say around here, we should go back to 1. We should start it over at 1.
Yeah.
And then, like, then do some legacy numbering down the line. And just throw everything into chaos.
Okay. I'll think about it. I don't know. I got 3.5 years to think about it, right?
You got plenty of time.
Right. All right, so here's what we got on the show today, Todd. Not much.
Okay.
It's a light news week. I think maybe a deceptive clickbait headline for the latest DC Black Label book. Mm-hmm. We got some movies, dates moving and grooving here. You know, one moving up, the other one moving way back.
Right.
We have our walk, our conventions this weekend, of course. We have our walk down Lois Lane with our good friend Becky. Back to Lois stuff. We'll talk about the call-ins for the advice for the Lovelorn a little bit later on. We have what we read from this past week, which is Pine and Merrimack number 3 and Blue Beetle number 7. What we're looking forward to coming out this week. Our continuation of Todd and Joe Have Issues, as we are discussing issue 4 of the first miniseries of Secret Six by Gail Simone, and whatever else comes up during the course of the show.
Right.
So let's get into the news. As mentioned, it was just announced for the upcoming June solicitations, and this is how sometimes things work out. We just got the May solicitations out. We don't even have final order cutoffs for stuff. But they always like to tease some new stuff that's coming out. Like, you know, I think last week Marvel said, like, Thanos is coming back. And I'm just like, that's not enough for me to sink my teeth into, right?
Right. I've been off Thanos since, you know, they keep reusing them and he get diminishing returns every time they go.
But I think the last, remember the Donny Cates Thanos series?
Yes, that was one time that I honestly went after a page of art harder than I ever have.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was the old Thanos and the young Thanos. Like, he's like, there's only one person who can kill me, and he's like, and that would be me. So I'm, you know, you have to try. And he's like, I wouldn't have it any other way. And I was like, I got goosebumps right here, Joe. Got goosebumps. I was like, I want that page. That's the last truly great, great Thanos. Everything after that is just, we just keep making the Mad Titan do mad things. It's boring.
I don't think we've had really anything since then, though.
Right. Even like, in nothing between there, major, we had the Bendis Avengers where it was crap.
Yeah. I know, so... It was originally Jeff Lemire, and then who took it over? Donny Cates took it over. Jeff Shaw was the artist, I guess?
Yeah, he was the one who created Cosmic Ghost, the two of them, Cosmic Ghost Rider.
Okay.
That was the last great Thanos run. And there wasn't much between that and the last good Jim Starlin one. They kept rehashing them. I mean, and I don't mean Thanos as just a book. I mean Thanos appearing in other books, too. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, he's the villain. And it's like, Yeah, they no direction or motivation for them.
That was about 6 years ago, so he's due, right? So, you know, where I was going with this is, so DC announced something. We talked here, we've kind of praised DC of doing a lot of different things, you know, trying to get some stuff out and different genres and different age ranges and stuff like that. And they just announced a graphic novel under Black Label, an original graphic novel by Mariko Tamaki, who they picked up, who's doing like a Robin series, I think, at DC in April or May. And then they're doing this in June. And then the art is by Javier Rodriguez, and it's called Zatanna Brings Down the House. And I'm cool. I like that. But I think some of the clickbait articles about that are saying it's an adults-only Zatanna book.
Right.
And I read, like, the interviews with Mariko, and I'm getting nothing that this is going to be, like, some sort of saucy or, like, X-rated story, right?
Right.
I'm sure Javier Rodriguez is going to draw a very sexy Zatanna in this book. I don't know. Like, I know you're trying to give some new creator some new stuff. But I feel as though this is a project that is, like, suited right down the alley of a Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor.
That I would guess. I don't know. I just look at it as, I think when they say adult, like Black Label, that it's going to have more adult themes. And when people see adult Zatanna, they're like, oh, it's going to be, you know, graphic, if you know what I mean. I don't know. I see it more Vertigo-y than adult. Everybody's like, you know, gravitating towards.
Sure.
But either way, I think it's, you know, Wizark. That's crazy backwards if you know Zatanna, Joe.
Yeah.
But no, I don't know. I mean, I'll try it. It's Black Label. It's Zatanna. I like the character. Whatever. I hope it's oversized so I have trouble fitting it in my comic boxes.
There you go. Precisely. But yeah, so Mariko Tamaki, she was actually supposed to do the Green Lantern book before Jeremy Adams got it. How about that?
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. I'm glad Jeremy Adams got it.
Yep. It's just that she is a creator that DC has been hotly after for like the last 2 years. I know they had just announced, like I said, the Robin book as a big signing. And then, of course, the Zatanna book. I'm sure it'll do well. I'm sure it'll be very good. And it's going to make me want to check out that Robin book, you know? So the only other thing that we have here in news is, as I mentioned, some movies got moved around. It just got announced as we literally went to press here, that Venom 3 got moved up by 2 weeks.
Right.
That is a movie that has been moved around quite a bit. You know, for a variety of reasons, those Sony Spider-Man adjacent movies kind of have like a floating timetable. It was supposed to be July of this year, then it got moved to November of this year, and now it's the now it's like 2 weeks up from that November date on October 25th.
Right.
I never saw the first two Venom movies. We talk about this all the time. The first Venom movie starring Tom Hardy. There was another movie that came out a year before called Upgrade with Tom Hardy in it, which has been told to me by people that actually know movies and so forth, that Upgrade was Venom without the Venom license, and then that's more than likely what got him hired to do Venom.
Right.
Yeah. And then the other movie that got moved around is Batman, the Batman sequel with what's-his-face from the Twilight movies in him.
Right. Patrickson?
Robert Pattinson.
Pattinson.
That got moved from October of 2025 to October of 2026.
Oh my God. Are you going to be okay, Joe?
I'll be fine. You know, there's enough stuff coming out in 2025, and I don't know. That feels as though that got moved more than likely due to whatever Jimmy Pistol is doing with the DC universe, and that kind of exists out of the DC universe. So maybe there might be something popping up on the schedule in 2025, not a Jimmy Pistol Batman movie, but the Jimmy Pistol DC universe using Batman in something. And they don't want to have two Batman projects the same year. This is just my mindless speculation.
Mm-hmm.
You never know.
Yeah, I think it was, oh, like, Jimmy Pistol has plans, but the, you know, the suits at Warner Brothers are like, well, that first, that other Batman always makes money. So let's keep going with this Batman, you know what I mean? And give us the Joker, because that's their whole MO. Anytime you do a Batman movie, you get one villain. The studio goes, you get one villain. Then the second movie, you're legally obligated to make it a Joker movie. And that's just the way I think this one's going to go, until it like runs out of steam. And you have that Joker movie with Harley coming out with Lady Gaga and Joaquin Phoenix. So you have a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah. So if you're a Batman person, there's plenty of Batman stuff to keep you satiated from now until 2026, right?
It's almost the golden age of Batman.
Yeah, it's the golden age. It's always the golden age of the good Batman. I hear it's the golden age of the bad Batman.
What?
Less said about that, the better. But, like I said, that's really all we got for news. There is a convention this weekend, Toronto Comic Con, which is part of the Fan Expo umbrella. This one definitely feels like a little bit of a smaller one, even though Toronto is a bigger city. No huge, huge names on this, but, you know, people that are right in our wheelhouse, the aforementioned Jeremy Adams is going to be there. And Tom Cavanagh, Where Have You Gone, is going to be doing appearances there as well.
Right. Lots of good stuff.
Yes. So if you are in the greater Toronto area, I hear that All Elite Wrestling is there this weekend as well. So I'm surprised no AEW folks are doing appearances at the convention, you know?
Probably they won't pay the fee in loonies, Joe.
Hmm. Well, the guy who got them the deal retired, but they should have all been grandfathered in. Yeah, nary an AEW person at that one. That's feels like an oversight. Feels like an oversight.
So sad that there's no wrestlers at this Comic-Con.
Yeah.
Sad. I can't put it into words, Joe.
Words?
There you go.
If you're in the greater Toronto area, of course, we'll have the link for the convention in the show notes here, along with information about the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com and soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. Now, I'm saying this to the audience, and I want Todd to, like, not listen for, like, 2 seconds. Do you want to see me trigger Todd? So I was going through my calendar for 2024 here, Todd.
Okay.
And make sure that, you know, April and I are up to date on all of our birthdays and anniversaries and weddings and everything else that's going on this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I get to November of 2024, and what do I have in there?
What?
The reminder to reach out to Studebaker about the hosting update.
The nuclear codes?
Yes. Because if you remember, every 3 years, when it gets to like that 1 week in December, where he forgets about it, and then it's a mad scramble to try to get him to get everything updated.
Yep. It becomes that moment where I go to our webpage for any reason to like look at like what we're reading or what we read last week to kind of get an idea. And then I text you. I'm like, the website's gone, Joe.
Yeah. So I have that in my calendar to start hawking him for it in November.
Mm-hmm.
Even if there isn't a website there, you can always go to soon-to-be-named-network.com for information about any and all the shows, anytime that they go live. And that includes, of course, this show, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Puzzle Warriors 3, Profane Arguments, At Odds with Wrestling, We Need Wrestling, Final Wrestling Place, Wings on Wings, Porch Talk is coming back soon, I hear.
The weather's getting nice.
All right. I'm just saying, that's one of the only few times that I'll acknowledge weather, if that means Porch Talk is back.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you can check out some of our other friends and the stuff that they're up to in and around the internet. Go check out Mike Sterling's blog over at ProgressiveRuin.com. Go check out our friend Kevin's blog at HellionsTeam.com. Go check out Rick Williams, the Chop Shop, at FreeKarateChops.StoreEnvy.com. Go check out Jason Sandberg's self-published Jupiter through his Indiegogo. You could buy it a la carte, just this straight-up collection, or with all the bells and whistles, or whatever bells and whistles you want. Go check out our friend Chris Runt's Battle Monsters, his own self-published comic over at FortressOfComicNews.com. Go check out our friend Davey of the band Cave People and his self-published comics over at CaveDomainComics.com. And of course, if you do not have a comic book store in your area, or you do not have a good comic book store in your area, let our store be your store. Comics on the Green. I have the Facebook page linked up there. You could find out when the books are coming in, because books come in on Tuesdays and Wednesdays for the time being. Final order cutoff dates, the latest and greatest pre-orders, and when the final order cutoffs for those are. And again, of course, whenever a lot of 2000 Silver Age and Bronze Age books just show up on Dave's doorstep, you could certainly peruse through them there. What did they get last? And so in addition to that, he also just got like, here's some like Ra's al Ghul first appearance, Ultron first appearances, just dropped off at the door, you know?
Right. And some Silver Age antifreeze, I heard too.
Yes. I already put a bid in on that.
Right. I know you did.
That's right. So if you're there, you know, of course, if you don't have a comic book shop in your area, as mentioned, support small, support local business, sign up for their mail order subscription service, get your book sent to you weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly. And if you do, there's a chance that you can get a sketch on the package from our good friend Becky, who we're going to turn things over to now for the latest installment of My Walk Down Lois Lane.
Welcome back to My Walk Down Lois Lane. So, some fun fact about old Lois and her Silver Age comics is that there are quite a few first and second appearances of DC characters. For example, the first Silver Age Catwoman, the second appearance of Brainiac, and the first appearance of not only Lois's family, but Lex Luthor's too. Today we're going to talk about issue 29 from 1961. It is considered the first Silver Age crossover with Aquaman, Batman, and Green Arrow. The cover... I'm going to describe the cover, but please Google it, because what I am about to tell you sounds so terrible. It is our heroes waiting in line while Aquaman tells Green Arrow it's his turn to hook up with Lois next. See? That sounds suspicious, so let's dive in and see what this is all about. Superman is nowhere to be found, and Clark is sick, so after Krypto the Superdog makes an L in the sky with fire, Perry asks Lois to come up with a juicy story, because if Jimmy or Lois isn't in trouble, they don't sell papers, and really nobody cares that a dog can spell. Lois suggests an article about all the heroes she's hooked up with besides Superman, and Perry says, and I quote, "Go to work on them." Lois dons her best feature-hugging dress and hits the streets looking for a hero. She spots Green Arrow performing tricks in a park and volunteers to help him. He uses an arrow to take off her necklace, and she grabs him in delight, gives him a hug, and kisses him in front of the cameras and in front of Lana. Lana threatens to tell Superman as Lois reapplies her lipstick and tells Lois she's disgusting, but Lois doesn't care. As Lana gets a call over the radio, there's a fire in the bay, and Aquaman is over there fighting it. The girls make it to the dock in time to see Aquaman rescuing people, and Lois runs up to him for her go-to move of a hug and a kiss. Aquaman asks for another, probably because he never gets this kind of attention. While Lois tells Lana Batman's in town and she would like to snatch him up too, and Lana tells her she has more crust than a pie. I don't know what that means, but I'm totally going to use it. Batman is busy fighting criminals in a movie theater because theaters and his life can never separate when Lois grabs him, hugs him, and kisses him. Lana still doesn't understand why any man would want to kiss Lois, but Lana is the most beautiful redhead in Metropolis. There's a trophy to prove it and everything. Suddenly, Aquaman and Green Arrow appear and hand over handkerchiefs with Lois's lipstick on them, and Batman takes off in his Batplane. Turns out Superman has been stuck at the North Pole this whole time, fighting aliens who trapped him with kryptonite. Batman tosses the handkerchiefs to him as Superman smears them all over his face and tells the aliens to scram, and that just works. turns out Superman told Krypto to signal Lois to use red kryptonite lipstick she has for emergencies and to transfer the red kryptonite to his friends so they could get it to him and free him without anyone finding out. Each hug was just to give a guy a heads up before she kissed him. The issue ends with Lois kissing Superman. Tune in next week for more Lois Lane.
So this is a very clickbaity issue as well. As Becky mentioned there, the cover a little misleading. And I did like... So she mentioned this is a rare instance where it's one continuous story in the issue, as opposed to how a lot of those Lois Lane stories would be. It'd be like two or three smaller stories.
Right.
And this was actually like... a good issue from the sounds of it, right? Like, it told an interesting story that I did not see what the twist was.
Mm-hmm. And when you find out, it's a very convoluted way to get lipstick to to Superman. I don't know. I just think that this was, you know, okay, this is the clean show. It's just, I don't know. I think it's an excuse. Elaborate,
some would say.
Elaborate, yes.
Yes.
Needlessly complicated.
Yes. But. And we're going to keep, we did get some calls, but we are going to keep the advice for the Lovelorn line open here for one more week, 570-846-0897. If you have any sort of love, need any sort of love advice or advice in general, call on the voicemail. Make sure you let us know that it's for Becky or for Longbox Heroes so I can make sure to put it in a certain folder. And again, we'll have Becky address some of those on a future episode.
Right. And beauty tips, too.
Yes.
She's known for her beauty tips. She's given you a better skin regimen than, what, using boiling water and a towel on your face?
Correct. Not even a towel, just handfuls and cupfuls of boiling water poured on my face.
There you go. There you go.
And let all the loose skin slough off, you know?
Listen, Joe, you've seen me in the shop. Do you think this just happens? All the help I've gotten from her to make this more presentable.
Yes, of course. So let's get into what we read from this past week. Todd, where would you like to begin?
I'm going to start with the book I was looking forward to most, which is Blue Beetle number 7, written by Josh Turillo, with various artists from, you know, Cully Hamner, Scott Collins, Howard Porter. And I like in the credits that it even says The Hunt for Ted Kord with, you know, all the creators, and then with love to Keith Giffen. As we said last week, this is, you know, a love letter. So basically, Booster Gold shows up to the current, you know, Blue Beetle. He's like, hi, me, like, we need to go. He's all busted up from something. He's like, well, where are we going? We got to go find Ted. Ted's gone. He's like, well, where is he gone? He's like, basically wibbly wobbly timing wimey. He's been thrust into, like, you know, ripped into parts, and we have to go, and they're called time anchors. So we're going to go do it, put them back together. And we get to see them travel, Jaime travel to various parts of, like, things that Keith Giffen did. We get to see him at Justice League International with Maxwell Lord. There's, you know, we get to see Black Canary in the best Black Canary outfit that she ever wore. They jump into the Legion era, blah, blah, blah. We find out they're being followed by Ambush Bug. Now, granted, most of these are characters that appear at Keith Giffen creations. And then we find out who they're working for. And I guarantee, I don't even know if Joe knows who they're working for, but I guarantee you 90% of the listeners, if you read this book and you find out who it is, you're like, who? And you find out, because it has to do a lot with continuity with Blue Beetle, that, like, over the years it's been said that the Scarab's magic, the Scarab's science, so it's kind of like a continuity thing. And in the end, it all really doesn't matter because it's just playful Keith Giffen Ambush Bugginess to the story. And we get to have a talk with Ted and Jaime, and that's, like, touching to see Ted. And there's, like, a bit at the end, like, with two characters who I have no idea who they are. That's the story that's going to go on, but that's not what I'm here for. I'm here for Ted and the fun. And it had a very Keith Giffen feel. If that's what it comes down to, it's a love letter to Keith Giffen. I think you nailed it in the absurdity in a good way. And I had a blast, and I'm glad I bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have any around to read?
Yeah, so I liked it. it was advertised and sold as a love letter to Keith Giffen, and it was every Keith Giffen-y thing that you could get in there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, obviously the one that you tiptoed around, I'll make sure to tiptoe around as well. I'm aware of that person because of getting older Keith DC stuff, right?
Yeah, the Ambush Bug books would, yeah.
Yeah, and I think that character maybe made one, like, more modern appearance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you have Lobo in it. You have all this other stuff in it, right? And it's pretty much, like, was OMAC in it and I just forgot?
I don't think so, but he didn't create, like, nobody's going all that Keith Giffen 8-issue run. And as much as I love Keith, my favorite phrase is the first book that was canceled in New 52, OMAC, you know what I mean?
I thought it was Men of War.
No, it was OMAC and Men of War.
Oh, okay, they're both
canceled. It was a tie. Photo finish joke.
There you go. But yeah, so like the Keith stuff was fun. I'm a little behind on Blue Beetle, but I read this, of course, because it was felt like it was self-contained, and it definitely was. Mm-hmm. Because, like I said, I'm a little bit behind on the book. It was interesting that so with Blue Beetle, I think that's the only book at DC that they actively solicit that you can get an English language and a Spanish language version of the book.
Right.
I don't think they solicited a Spanish language version of this.
Okay.
Now, this may be the experiment is over and they've decided not to do that any longer, or they just happen to do this. They're like, yeah, okay, this book is going to be picked up by, you know, more people because of the Keith Giffen angle, so let's not worry about it this month or whatever, because it's kind of self-contained, like I said. But the bit that with the main characters in the book, Jaime and his mom, that more cries back to the Keith run on Blue Beetle, because you have to remember, Keith created this iteration of Blue Beetle, right?
Right. I think it was drawn by Cully Hamner, too, so it really gave you that, like, you know.
Because, yeah. But if you're, you know, if you enjoyed the Blue Beetle movie like I did that came out last year, and if you enjoy Old Man Comics that Keith Giffen wrote, like Todd and myself do, give this a try, you know?
Right.
It'll feel real nostalgic in seeing a lot of the old Keith Giffen stuff pop up and, like, all of it in one big giant jam issue. And maybe you might enjoy the Blue Beetle stuff and continue reading it from there. It's a way to get you to read a new book, you know?
Right. And one last thing, the thing that I really like was when someone says, maybe, you know, our reward is miniseries and swimsuit specials.
Mm-hmm.
Nort had one, so I guess it's working. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So that, like, popped me hard, like, when Nort showed up and then they mentioned it. I was like, oh, DC, every once in a while, you're super fun. But anyway.
It doesn't happen very often, but when it happens, it is definitely fun, like you said. Mm-hmm. So the other book that we both read from this past week was Pine and Merrimack number 3 from Boom Studios, written by friend of the show, Kyle Starks, with art by Fran Galan. And again, we're in the middle of a storyline. You should be picking this up. If you're not picking it up, highly recommended. But we get a bit at the beginning of this issue where we get a little bit of Linnea's origin story of her in present day as we get her on her last case, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the weak stomach that she has that kind of has her going away from homicide. And we get the information of her wanting to go into homicide in regards to all of this. We get more reminiscing as they're on the stakeout waiting outside the building where they think something is going on. Mm-hmm. They reminisce back to the one case where all they had to do was read the note on the door.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have never have gotten caught. And then, of course, you know, they have their disguises. They got off the island. They go into the cult-esque party. And obviously, it's a situation of how long can they wait before they actually have to do what they came there to do, which is to stop everyone. Like, how long do you sit there and wait for the cultists to act out their plan before you finally step in and say, okay, we need to stop this.
Right, right.
And not that any of that matters, because they get found out. And that's like the cliffhanger of issue 3. I'm kind of giving it a glossing over, because I really can't get into too much if you didn't read issues 1 and 2, which were really good. But I did like the two little flashbacky stories that we got in this to help flesh out our two main characters. I thought that was the some of the strongest stuff in the book.
Right. I do like how they do, like you said, we're getting more and more with her weak stomach towards, like, you know, murder. And, like, it doesn't give much away. There's a bit where, you know, it becomes a problem for her on the force, but she has this thing with, like, pinching herself to kind of help her from, you know, being sick when she sees murder stuff. And somebody's mentioning it, like, while they're undercover in the costumes in the present day. And there's the bit where she's just, like, pinch, pinch, pinch. And I'm like, fleshes out the character. But now I'm starting to think there's more to that, like, each time Kyle gives us a little bit more, I'm like, there's something to this. And a smaller thing that I do like is, I do admit, confidence will get you into anywhere, can definitely get you past the door if you just act with confidence. And I won't say what your alternate plan to get you out is, but I will say it's worked for me every time.
Oh, really?
Yes. If you use that phrase, you will get out of parking or out of speeding tickets.
Oh. I'll let my wife know. Not that she needs the help, but I'll let her know.
There you go. There you go.
But I am definitely a big believer, you know, I think the best example of that, you know, walk anywhere with confidence, you can get in anywhere, was on 30 Rock when Matt Damon was on as a pilot.
Okay.
And he just ends up backstage at the show and he ends up whatever. And Tina Fey's character Liz Lemon says to him, like, how did you get back here? And he goes, I'm dressed as a pilot. People just, you know, leave me alone. I just walk with confidence. He goes, I walked into the Obama's bedroom once.
Yeah, he needs a clipboard. You know what I mean? Look important.
And again, side note as well, this doesn't work so much these days, but there was a time we all used to joke around. If you show up at a wrestling show, right, and you're wearing nice slacks and a button-up polo, right, and you're carrying something, no one will stop you.
Sure, because that's less work they don't have to do, you know?
They just assume you're part of the road crew, or the road crew assumes that you're with the building. And if somebody from the building asks you, say that you're with the road crew. Someone from the road crew asks you, you say you're with the building.
That's right. Just hope you don't run into somebody who's hanging out with a building guy's hanging out with the road crew at some point.
They usually don't get along too much.
Yeah, there you go.
But yeah, so this is a really good book. Like I said, it's tough for us to talk really in depth about it because you really need to get in depth on all the other stuff, as I mentioned, but it's a book you definitely should be checking out. I think with the March solicitations, the trade is in there. If you're a print comic person, they've done second and third prints on the first two issues. If you don't want the single issues, you want the trade is solicited in the March previews catalog. So let your retailer know, order it wherever you order your stuff. Don't, you know, I'm telling you what to do, right? So that's what we read from this past week. Let's get into what we're looking forward to coming out this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday around noon Eastern time, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them sent to your home, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out this week. Todd and I attempt to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Todd is currently in the lead over me with one correct guess. And I tell you, Todd, this is a tough week. A lot of different sites and a lot of different dates for a lot of different things.
Yeah, but I think it's all worked out nicely, Joe.
I think it took us a couple emails, but we got there. Not belaboring the point, I think the book you're most looking forward to coming out this week would be Action Comics 1063.
It is. I've really been enjoying the Superman Bizarro storyline that Jason Aaron, he can draw pretty well, or write pretty well. I'm looking over your list, and is the book you're looking forward to most Black Widow and Hawkeye number one?
It is not.
Is it Action Comics?
It is Action Comics 1063.
Well, then I have to take the rule out. Any new Hawkman number one jumps to the top of the list. So
Hawkeye.
Hawkeye, I meant to say.
So the Hawkeye books are more are very similar to your Flash books.
Oh, completing the collection.
If there is a Hawkeye solo or duo series,
mm-hmm.
or a book where he's the lead in it, like there was that Thunderbolts book that came out a couple right. of years back where he was the lead of the book, mm-hmm. I have to get it. I'm unfamiliar with the creative team on the book, but it's a Hawkeye solo-ish book, so I gotta get it.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah.
Subterfuge.
Listen, there was no subterfuge. It's just we're tied up now.
Mm-hmm. It's like all those weeks didn't matter, Joe.
Yeah, exactly. Like the previous 7 weeks didn't matter at all. So while you're over at longboxheroes.com, of course, be sure to check out past episodes of this show, past episodes of Longbox Heroes After Dark, and of course, our current ongoing series, Todd and Joe Have Issues, where we are rereading all of Gail Simone's Secret Six. We got the Villains United stuff out of the way. We got a couple issues of the Secret Six before we take a Birds of Prey detour. And then outside of some crossovers, it's smooth sailing Ashley Remington throughout the rest of the Secret Six issues.
Okay.
So this week we are going to be discussing issue 4 of 6 of the miniseries from 2006 of Secret Six, written by Gail Simone with art by Brad Walker. And this is our heroes, the six, being dropped into the laps of the Doom Patrol.
Right.
Now, I wrote a little bit about this in the post for the Todd and Joe Have Issues of this. Do you remember the Doom Patrol stuff going on at this time?
I remember some of it. This was John Byrne Doom Patrol?
This was right after the John Byrne run.
I was not a fan of the John Byrne run.
No one was a fan of the John Byrne run.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, obviously it was very highly touted. It was very highly publicized. I think Dan DiDio, who was the grand poobah at DC, was very happy and very excited by it. But I think a lot of John Byrne's ideas that he had for the Doom Patrol...
Right.
Didn't quite fit into even 2004, 2005 sensibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, reading up on stuff, a lot of folk, they kind of... Doom Patrol was one of the people that were most affected by the events of Infinite Crisis.
Mm-hmm.
In that they essentially got rid of the John Byrne run. It was only a couple issues, but it was like they felt it was like damaging enough that like, okay, we just need to completely ignore it. And they took Beast Boy out of the Teen Titans and put him back in Doom Patrol. Like that was like the big move that they did.
Right. Because people forget that that's like that was where he was originally from kind of.
Yes.
Thing, wasn't he?
Yes. And then he just became a Titans character. Everyone kind of remembers him as a Titans character. Doom Patrol, you know, gets, I guess they were a very forgotten, a very, I don't want to say maligned, but like no one was really a Doom Patrol fan until the Grant Morrison run in the 90s. But right, I'm not and that a fan was of
polarizing.
That yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Nobody's a diehard Doom Patrol guy. I will say, all the quirkiness, and from what I hear, I'm not going to say from personal experience, all the quirkiness that to me never really worked in the comic, everybody says worked really well in that Doom Patrol, that Brendan Fraser Doom Patrol TV show.
Yes.
I've heard only wonderful things about that.
Right. And it's just one of those things, there's only so much that we could watch.
Right, right.
Yeah. So, you know, your two main stories that are essentially going on at this point is due to the machinations of Dr. Psycho and Lady Shiva working with Vandal Savage. Secret Six get dropped right in front of the Doom Patrol. And as you know, and it's even addressed, anytime two superhero folks meet for the first time, there's always going to be a fight. But Cat, and they're like, hey, listen, you guys are all villains. You're wanted for a bunch of things. Catman's like, we got two people injured here. How about you help us get to a hospital? And then after you get to the hospital, we could fight.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, okay, deal. And then Catman's like, psych. And they have their big knockdown, drag out fight.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody kind of pairs up. You get lots of fun pairings and dialogue and uses of the powers. And I think in this one issue, and Doom Patrol's not even in the full issue, but Gale does a great job of getting the Doom Patrol over as a credible threat.
Right.
In this, we have that fun bit with Ragdoll as he is taking on... Elastigirl. Elastigirl. Again, she gets her name changed a little bit every now and then, but like she always has that classic look with the red and white dress, you know?
Mm-hmm.
As she grows to enormous sizes over the whole crew of them, and Ragdoll remarks that he wishes Parademon was here to see this.
Yeah. It's lovely, you know?
Because they had the similar bit from the Villains United miniseries with Giganta.
Mm-hmm.
So they scrap. Secret Six get away to live for another day, but it's not until they pull out the secret weapon, which is the Mad Hatter, who, again, is mad, but he came through in a pinch and helped the Secret Six there. And again, I say it every week that we talk about this, we get a nice creepy bit at the end with a naked Mad Hatter, of course, just wearing a hat or two hats.
Right, rolling around in hats.
Yes, I really think Gail Simone could have gotten a lot of mileage out of the creepiness groundwork that was laid for Mad Hatter, or at the very least another writer could have picked up on some of this and kind of elevated Mad Hatter to a higher level, a bigger threat or whatever it was. And it's not like I'm some sort of Mad Hatter apologist, but I really think that Gail does like interesting things with him that no one has ever done with Mad Hatter in this.
Right. Well, no. I mean, Joe, Gail's going to have a long run on this. Mad Hatter's going to be around till the end of all of Secret Six. So.
Oh, that's right. Yes,
that's right. I don't know where you think he's going.
Yeah. But then we have the stuff with Vandal Savage, Lady Shiva, and Dr. Psycho.
And where... it's Cheshire, by the way.
Oh, Cheshire. I apologize. Lady Shiva. But you know, yeah. I have it's Lady Shiva. I have Lady Shiva on the brain from the Patreon show this past week.
Right, and also the previous issue. Wasn't she the one that they kind of went after? But anyway.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Sending them on wild goose chases. And Vandal Savage lays his plan out. It's like, I don't want you to beat them, but I want you to beat them enough that my daughter Scandal feels as though she needs to come to me.
Right, she's got nowhere else to go.
Right, I want you to, like, not beat her, defeat her, but beat her to a point where that she thinks she needs me. And by doing so, Vandal Savage essentially says, you have both failed, and their punishment is that they have to eat steaks that are made of Solomon Grundy?
Which is fantastic. It's okay, he'll regenerate, Joe.
Right, he'll regenerate. Cheshire don't like it, and Dr. Psycho maybe begrudgingly likes it a little bit more than he thought he would.
Right, he may have asked what's else on the menu after that.
Yeah, and we did get a bit, I think, during the tail end of the Villains United stuff, where it is revealed that Vandal Savage may have been the first cannibal ever.
Yeah, and that was always kind of a deal with him, but go ahead.
Right, so again, whether he may or may not have been, I definitely feel as though this issue cements that he was.
Right.
And we get a bit that I've fondly remember. And I say fondly because as I'm reading this, I'm like, oh my goodness, I know what's going to happen. Oh no, I know what's going to happen. But they have the battle. They're back at their headquarters. Everyone's off in their own quarters. Deadshot, maybe getting a celebratory beer. Knockout, maybe looking for a celebratory something else.
Mm-hmm. Just having a deep discussion with her, because she even mentions that she had a kid at one point.
Yep.
And she's glad, you know, that she was never her mother, kind of a deal. And
right, we get the bit there because, you know, obviously part of this is that Deadshot has his kid being dangled off him, and that's always like his, I guess, Achilles heel sort of thing.
Right.
That even if you know, you could always kind of get him over a barrel if you threaten the family, you threaten the kid sort of thing, right?
Right, and it's always, is he with the ex-wife and the kid because they're in danger? It's like, you know what I mean? You could do so much with it. But.
Yes. And so again, obviously, they have a little bonding moment. Maybe they have a little bit more of a bonding moment. Scandal is having those bad dreams, which is just her father, Vandal Savage, kind of, you know, entering her thoughts against her will. She wakes up, and the last panel is Scandal walking in on the two of them.
Yep, Deadshot and Knockout.
And I sit here, and at the time I recall, how are they going to get themselves out of this one?
Yep, how are those Secret Six boys going to get out of this
one? But then rereading this, I'm like, oh, I remember how they get out of this one.
Yep. They do a lot of interesting things with the dynamic.
Definitely. And again, this is part of the reason why I'm glad that this ended up being the book that we're reading for this year. You know, obviously it could be just, you know, hand waved as like, oh, it's just, you know, Suicide Squad with the numbers filed off, or it's, you know, it was a lower tier book or whatever it was, like whatever thing that you're going to hand wave it off. You know, there's no stars in the book. But those are the books that a lot of times that you get a little bit more leeway to flesh someone out. You know, we talked many issues ago in regards to Catman almost being a blank slate.
Mm-hmm.
And Gale uses this run to make Catman into something, you know, to make him a credible threat, a credible character in the DC universe. And then, you know, sadly, New 52 kind of, you know, just flushes all that down the toilet.
Flushes a lot down the toilet at DC as far as I'm concerned, but you know,
yeah,
but that's not that what this show's about. So
no, waxing nostalgic from books from 15 to 18 years ago here, Todd, you know,
right. That's our wheelhouse.
Well, our wheelhouse is actually a little bit older than that, but you know, hopefully we're inspiring you to go check this out. Read along with us, get the omnibus when it comes out this summer, catch up with us, and then read along with us, you know?
Yep, yep.
So this was issue 4. Next week, we'll be reading issue 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, easy as that. So you want to help us out, of course, you can head over to our store, which is essentially just shooting me an email or a message if you're in the Discord. I got shirts, I got pins, I got stickers. Let's make a deal, folks. TeePublic store doesn't have a sale this week. Has a sale next week. I'll remind you there. You can help us out by making any and all of your eBay purchases through our eBay affiliate link. This page contains affiliate links for eBay. We may receive a small commission on purchases you make. You can use this affiliate link anytime you want to buy anything on eBay and support the show at the same time.
Yeah.
But the bestest, most awesomest way to support the show is to sign up for our Patreon, patreon.com/longboxheroes. As little as $1 a month, you're going to get 2 bonus shows every month from Todd and myself. One is previewing the past, where we look at 30 years ago, this month's previews catalog, to see what the world of comics looked like way back then, and to see if any lessons have been learned in the last 30 years. Spoilers, they have not. The other show that we do is Comic Book Oddities, where we look at some of the more maligned, less remembered pre-Marvel Cinematic Universe stuff, made-for-TV movies, failed pilots, and 2024 movie sensations that are sweeping the nation, because the most recent one that we have up there is our review of Madam Web.
Mm-hmm.
And in about a week or so, we're going to be doing the 2-episode television event for Malibu Comics Nightman, not to be confused with Dayman.
Exactly.
And also, $5 a month, you're going to get those 2 bonus shows 2 weeks before everyone else. You're going to get Longbox Heroes After Dark 2 days before everyone else, so you can listen to everything in the correct listening order. And no matter what level that you're at there, you're going to get those full scans of those previews catalogs. High quality, expertly done. Even if you don't get a chance to listen to the podcast, and again, those previewing the past end up to be sometimes like 3+ hour shows. I get it. Not everyone has the same amount of time to listen to podcasts like I do. Go look back through those previews catalogs. They're all together. Like, Patreon lets you group all that stuff and look at a cover and say, I remember that book coming out. I remember that book coming out. I remember when Marvel's issue 1 came out, and thumb through the previews catalog and just look at those images to see what the world of comics looked like. And then go grab that issue, the episode that we did. We try to make them as evergreen as possible. Sometimes current day stuff slips in there, but I feel as though you can go and listen to the ones that we did back in 2020 and 2021, and they'll feel as fresh and new as the ones that we did just this past Friday.
And I will say I ran into our good buddy DJ at the comic shop
today. Oh, okay.
And I'm like, DJ, you're a Hellboy fan, aren't you? Look at all this stuff. And I ended up sending him just the page that had the first ever Hellboy merchandise in the catalog. And he's like, oh, yeah, this was after that time or this time. You know, I didn't get into Hellboy until then, and I worked my way back. I'm like, well, here's a pin and a poster. Like, you're like, Mr. Enabler, you're like, you got to go hunt these down. He's like, I don't know if I'm going to do that, but it's nice to have. So I do hope that I put the seed in there and it grows into money being pulled out of DJ's pocket.
A seed of destruction, if you will.
Yep, yep.
But that's it. That's all we got, man.
Short show.
Yeah. We didn't jinx ourselves at the beginning of the show by saying it was a short show. So that's how I knew it was going to be a short show. How about that? See?
That's what we got to do. I got to say it's going to be a short show. Everyone knows. So.
Yes. All right. So, hey, everyone, thank you very much for your continued support. Thank you very much for listening to us for all these years that we've been doing the show. And for Todd, this is Joe closing out episode 701 of Longbox Heroes. And we'll see you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
You're listening to the soon-to-be-named network, the Lamborghini of podcast networks.
The Rob is a Longbox hero. He gives us five stars.